But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Advice Show. I'm Zach, a reporter at New Model Advisor. I'm joined today by Chief Reporter Nicola Blackburn, and today we're reacting to the 2024 Spring Budget. Nicola and I are joined by Matthew Pescott-Frost, founder of East Anglian IFA, Matthew Douglas. Matthew, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Yeah, nice to be here.
Getting straight into it, firstly, what did you make of this budget? And do you think it'll have much of an impact to the UK economy, to your clients and to advisors?
Yeah, I mean, it was fairly underwhelming, and most of the content had already been sort of leaked already. So I think we sort of knew what was going to happen, which was interesting because markets didn't really react very much at all. I think there was a little bit of a bounce to UK stocks on the announcement of a British ISA temporarily, which was interesting. But things like the 2p reduction in national insurance, I think we kind of knew that was coming. So that was interesting, but good to see that they sort of followed it through. Obviously, reduction in tax on capital gains for property, interesting again. Removing non-don status, bit of a strange one. Sounded like a bit of a Labour policy. So they're obviously trying to get steal a march on the Labour Party. But it was interesting, but not that interesting.
And Matthew, what about for your clients? Which measures stood out as particularly significant for them?
I think anybody's going to welcome a reduction in national insurance, although curiously, obviously, quite a lot of our clients, like most IFAs, will be a lot of them will be retired or close to retirement. So clearly it's not going to impact them. So that's probably the point. When there's been big sort of inflationary related rises on the sort of triple lock. So I guess this was a way of the government being able to claw something back. Apart from that, I think the property thing was probably the most interesting and probably the one that's going to impact my clients more than anything else. Non-dom status is not that relevant, frankly, for our clients. Beyond that, I don't know, really. Interesting.
That sounds great. And we'll certainly get onto the capital gains tax that's in property later on as well. Firstly, just on the British ISA, you know, the allowance of an additional £5,000 for investment in what the government calls promising UK businesses. And that sits obviously alongside the 20 grand that can be invested across the other ISA wrappers as well. Do you think this will provide enough choice for investors? And how do you think this works with the complexity that's already in the system at the moment?
Yeah, that was kind of my thought. Is that a problem? I mean, I felt a bit conflicted on this because instinctively I don't like the idea of trying to manipulate markets in this way and sort of. But at the same time, if it means that there's an extra £5,000 ISA allowance, then clearly we'll be happy to take it. I mean, if you look at UK stocks generally, they've had a pretty torrid time over the last 10 years, and you would have to say that there is value to be had. In that area of the sort of global market. So it makes it interesting. And I think, you know, we would certainly grab it with both hands as a financial advisor. But looking ahead, is it right to be encouraging people to perhaps invest in a place where maybe the returns aren't going to be there? I actually think they are. And our own portfolios are slightly more skewed to the UK than they would have been 12 months ago. So it kind of plays into a narrative that we're happy to run with. But the question is it actually going to happen?
We spoke to a few advisors about this last week, and one of them said, sort of echoed what you just said earlier. He said, you know, don't let the tax tail wag the financial planning dog. Do you agree that that's something that government is doing here?
Yeah, 100%. And then the other thing, just on a practical level, it's kind of inconvenient in the sense that if you imagine if we're running models, we're now thinking, okay, we're going to have a separate model just to cater for UK stocks when the main models are already catering to UK stocks. So how do we actually play that, you know, and how is it going to work in practice? Is there just going to be a £25,000 limit and they're just going to say, right, as long as you've got, you know, 20% of that in UK stocks, that's okay. That would be simple. Or is it going to be a separate thing that's ring-fenced that is, you know, sort of branded up UK ISA and has to be separate? I don't know.
Yeah.
So we need to know the detail.
But you think you will recommend it to your clients?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Or sort of use it with your clients?
Yeah, particularly as, you know, the sort of shrinkage of sort of nil rate BABA capital gains tax. You know, the more opportunity we can to take money out of things like unit trusts and put them into ISAs, yeah, we'll certainly welcome that.
And aside from measures such as, you know, the British ISA, which I imagine is welcomed for UK investment in UK companies, how else can we encourage more UK investment? You know, it's clearly a problem that's been identified.
Good question. It's very difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, you'd like to think that markets are rational. I think there is a general bias against the UK, and I think there has been for some time. And it perhaps it goes back to the Brexit vote to some degree. I'm sure there's something in that. But yeah, it's been difficult. I mean, we are a very kind of dividend-led market, stock market. So consequently, you know, in the last 10 years, okay, maybe not so much in the last 2 years, but over the last 10 years, growth has very much dominated. And US has been really the only place to find returns. Yeah, if you're looking for something risk adjusted.
And you mentioned that you know, among your clients that there's a slightly higher allocation to the UK in their portfolios. Do you feel you know, somewhat confident that the returns in the UK might pick up this year to an extent?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we are actually quite positive. So and we're positive across the board. But if you're looking any areas of the globe, you'd have to say the UK for a developed market is probably the cheapest there is. So yeah.
Yeah, interesting. It sounds like, you know, if we see the British ISA, you know, become an allowance that clients can use, then it might be a really advantageous time.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds really good. And also, you know, on that vein of thought, I wanted to talk a little bit about the non-dom tax status.
Yeah.
And that being scrapped, you know, this will, I mean, you mentioned that you don't have many non-doms as clients, but it will affect a lot of advice firms who do. And I just wondered how, first of all, what did you make of the policy? As you mentioned, it was a surprise given that it was previously a Labour policy.
Yeah, I think it was a daft policy, personally. I mean, you know, the Chancellor was only saying 2 years ago exactly the same thing. You know, you scrap non-dom status, what are these people going to do? They're just going to go somewhere else. So it's a purely political move, and it serves no real genuine purpose. I suppose in the very short term, it might raise a little bit of tax revenue. And let's face it, this government is thinking very short term at the moment. So I guess that's the reason they're doing it. And they're just trying to take away, you know, one of the stories from Labour. If anything, I suppose you could argue that the Conservatives have been arguing for so long that it's not going to make much difference. This way they can perhaps prove it before the election. I don't know.
Perhaps. I mean, you know, there are a variety of sort of slightly more technical transitional arrangements, all designed to make non-doms essentially stay. So, you know, to make it easier for them, but also to get them to stay long term. Do you think there's an argument to be said that, you know, scrapping the status aligns us more with tax systems in other countries where the status wasn't there? Do you see anything in that, or do you think?
Well,
this is
yeah,
just...
that's true, but I mean, is that, I don't see that as a good thing. I mean, you know, if there's any, you know, I mean, without sort of wading into the kind of Brexit debate, it surely it makes sense if you're not aligned to other nations, particularly similar nations across Europe. There's an argument that says, well, try and manipulate that, try and make use of your difference. And I just don't feel they're doing it. I don't know who they're trying to pander to be honest.
I mean, obviously, you know, this is, I think their estimations was it would raise 2.7 billion. And they're obviously looking to try and raise money from wherever they can. And I think part of that is to fund tax cuts. Yeah. Do you think maybe we should be going for a different approach?
Well, again, we're wading into politics now, but yeah, I do actually. I mean, you know, my personal view is, what's the point unless you actually look at cutting the amount of public expenditure? You know, you've got to do these things hand in hand. You can't just turn around and say, we're going to raise money here, but we're not going to compensate it anyway by cutting the amount of government expenditure at the same time. It doesn't make any sense.
I wanted to ask as well about the potential implications for inheritance tax fall on Dobbs as well. That's unclear as of yet. You know, the government have said that they'll set to have consultations on this. But I wondered if that might be the key to sort of, you know, how much this will impact some non-Dobbs. Do you think that'll it'll rely on inheritance tax?
Yeah, they haven't really said very much about it. So I think, and that's probably deliberate, I think we're just waiting on a bit more meat on the bones, really, so we can get a better understanding of what their agenda is.
Oh, can we should speak on IHT more broadly, actually. Matthew, what do you make of this kind of to-ing and fro-ing that we've seen in terms of rumours about a partial IHT cut, a full IHT cut, and, you know, people wondered whether it would be mentioned in this budget and it wasn't. Yeah. What do you make of all of that?
My very cynical kind of conspiracy theorist thinking on this is that there are a lot of vested interests when it comes to inheritance tax, who probably lobby government quite heavily. If you start cutting inheritance tax, it starts to play around with things like, for example, business property release schemes. Again, maybe I'm being a bit, I'm thinking too deeply about it, but it does trouble me that a conservative government has so much trouble actually coming up with the idea of cutting inheritance tax. It does seem a little ludicrous to me. But I don't know. I sometimes wonder who they're talking to. They seem to be talking to a group of people who are never going to support them anyway.
Yeah. And you touched on this just then, but we actually ran an article last year that sort of considered the implications for, you know, the field of business relief portfolios, that whole market, right? The AIM market as well, if we saw a partial or full cut to inheritance tax. For advice clients, that would, you know, have huge implications.
Well, funny enough, I went to a seminar not that long ago, and I won't mention names, but it was being... it was a presentation by a company that's very big in this space. And I asked the question, I said, we had the whole question about, you know, there was at the time there was talk of scrapping inheritance tax completely. And I made the point, I said, well, if they do that, that's going to completely destroy your business model. Which they acknowledged. And I said, well, surely you must spend a lot of money actually in government, lobbying government departments, to which they were very proud of the fact that, yes, they did. So, and you're thinking, whose side are you on here?
So obviously we saw that for the higher rate payers, CGT will be reduced from 28% to 24%. So we did speak about it briefly earlier, Matthew, but do you think this will have a pretty significant impact for clients that this will affect? I mean, the government was saying that this might lead to more sales of second properties, which might potentially help people get on the housing ladder. What do you think?
I hope you're right. I think that's probably the intention. Again, being cynical about it, you do wonder if that could have some unintended consequences. If you suddenly get loads and loads of people pulling out of the buy-to-let market because they see an opportunity to do it, and think, particularly as they might think it might get reversed by the next government, that could have implications for how much available housing stock is there for renters. But I guess you can't please everybody all the time. You know, if it frees up more people to buy first-time properties, then perhaps it is the right decision. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I am in favour of it. I think generally speaking, yeah, selfishly for my clients, it's a good thing. And if they offload some properties and they want to invest some money from the proceeds, that's absolutely great.
Have you been having those conversations, or have any clients started making noises about potential property sales?
It's a bit early because it's only just happened. But I mean, I think more generally over the last couple of years, there's most definitely a move away from property. I think partly because markets perhaps look a little bit more attractive. But I think a lot of people are just think it's hassle. There's a lot more kind of tenants' rights than perhaps they used to be. And I think the direction of travel is that's probably going to only increase, particularly with the change of government.
Yeah.
Therefore, to be a landlord has always seemed to be the baddie. So, in a sense, I think people see the writing on the wall and they just want to get out.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they want this tax reduction to encourage more change in the, you know, among property owners and in that sector, do you think the cuts potentially need to be more significant than from 28% to 24%, or do they need to be thinking about this differently?
What do you think? Yeah. No. I mean, I'd certainly welcome that. That's a difficult question. I guess they must do their market research to work out how much difference it's going to have. But yeah, I mean, sure, if they brought it down further, that would be great. Mm. There will be a lot of sense in it.
Mm.
Yeah, and presumably more good news for your clients.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. But you know, perhaps my clients are not typical of the wider public. But yeah, I think that's probably right.
It's interesting though. Obviously, not really particularly the stuff we write about, but it's interesting that people are saving away from the property market, and I guess that just speaks to the severity of the housing crisis in the UK for all involved, not just tenants.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's difficult times. It really is. I mean, we just don't have enough housing stock, let's be honest.
Mm. So I guess overall, Matthew, how significant is this for second homeowners? I imagine some of your clients might be second homeowners. What do you think?
I don't think it's going to make a massive difference, but I think it's definitely going to inform their thinking. So, you know, if they were already thinking along those lines of maybe offloading property, I'm sure a lot of people will think this is the time to do it because governments can change and policy can change. So, yeah, I think that's the direction of travel.
Speaking more generally, I mean, obviously, we're limited by the economic state that we're in terms of tax cuts. But do you think the government are looking in the right areas to cut taxes?
Honestly, no. I mean, you know, I'm not making policy, but I'd certainly be looking at inheritance tax. I think there's a lot of silly, like, really ridiculous anomalies within the inheritance tax system. You know, you look at how million-pound houses are treated versus other types of asset, and you're thinking that doesn't make any sense because all you do is end up with unintended consequences of old people living in properties way too big for them because they're terrified of losing their inheritance tax allowances. So that sort of thing, you know, could make a difference. I also think perhaps it's helpful to look at things like income tax because I think that's a bit more of a headline. And the other thing is it's all the stealth tax of the fact that they're not increasing the bandings on you know different rates of tax. You know, that's quite damaging. I understand that they need the money and they need to find it from somewhere. But I think, you know, without sounding too much like Liz Truss, I think you need to stimulate the economy a little bit to give us, you know, to perhaps encourage a little bit of economic growth, because that's the only way you're really going to find your way out of it.
Do you think there's a little bit of a disconnect perhaps between some of those thresholds being frozen and, you know, a lot of the rhetoric around incentivizing more growth in the UK, incentivizing more investment?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's not sending a very positive message, is it? It's basically dragging more and more people into higher rate tax bands, or some people, you know, into tax bands at all when they previously weren't. I just don't think it sounds like it doesn't make Britain look like a dynamic economy and somewhere you want to start moving a business. Coming on to other tax rates, the other thing that really I find really depressing is the corporation tax at 25%. I mean, nobody's really talking about it, but I mean, that's over a 30% rise in corporation tax. I mean, what are they thinking? It makes no sense whatsoever to me.
Interesting thinking about that. I think one of the announcements in the budget was that they were going to extend a tax break to businesses based on rented material as well as material that they owned.
The thing is that's fine for manufacturing, but we're a service-based economy. Most people, ourselves included, we're in the service-based economy. It makes pretty much no difference to us. Mm. It's a good headline, but it actually makes no odds whatsoever.
No. It was a big jump, that corporation tax, wasn't it? Wasn't it up from 18%?
No, it was 19% to 25%. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think it worked out as a 32% increase. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, I've just paid my own tax bill and you suddenly, you see the difference. So,
of course, that's going to be a big one for advisors.
Yeah.
It's interesting thinking about, you know, the dynamism of the economy sort of, and you know, many advisors told us that this was sort of a damp squib of a budget, really. Because on the flip side of that, obviously what the government are trying to do really is avoid, you mentioned, you know, Liz Truss changes, is avoid the whirlwind that we ended up with that and present this image of a stable, united front, predictable, right? Do you think that probably informs their thinking?
I'm sure it probably does, but I think they're wrong. again, you know, are we now an economy that's run by the OBR? I mean, you know, why do we have elected politicians? You know, is this really the mandate that they were elected on? I'm not sure that it is. So, yeah, I think it's disappointing. And I think they should be a bit more courageous. I mean, at the end of the day, it's last chance saloon, isn't it? The way the polls are going, they're going to be wiped out, the Tories. So unless they come up with something radical, nothing's going to change.
Would you see, I mean, I guess probably making it a bit too personal here, but would you see a similar attitude from the Labour ranks on economic policy?
I mean, some people are saying there's barely a cigarette paper between them. I mean, in terms of their... I mean, it seems to be Tory policy right now is things are looking really bad, guys. How are we going to fix this? I'll tell you what, we'll pretend to be the Labour Party and then we'll take all of their policies away and then they won't have anything to say. But you might as well not be in government if you're going to adopt that kind of policy.
Talking about headlines, obviously the 2p cut, a further 2p cut to national insurance was a big headline from the government. Again, the cynic in what we've just spoken about would say that, you know, this was just a move to win votes, really, for going into another general election. Do you think this will have much of an impact, particularly as, again, it could be reversed if Labour get into power?
Yeah, well, it's been funny, hasn't it? The last 3 or 4 years, the stock answer from any Labour politician to any kind of spending plan that they announce is that, oh, it'll be funded through scrapping non-dom status. So they've managed to kind of you know, pass this around onto so many different spending plans that they've announced over a period of time. Which, and again, let's face it, most of those spending plans have gradually been quietly shelved. I just don't see where we go from here. To be honest, it's a bit of a muddle.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some people have said that they think the messaging around the scrapping reducing NI is that the intention is to scrap it altogether. Let's just pretend we don't have a general election this year. How you know, further do you think the government want to go in terms of getting rid of this for those?
Well,
talk
is cheap. I mean, you can say anything if you haven't got to implement it. You know, that's to take sort of 8p off national insurance is completely unaffordable at the moment. And clearly, if they did that, they then have to find the money from somewhere else. So, it's a great sentiment, but and in many ways, I sort of get it and I kind of understand it, and I think I can see why it would grab a headline. But I see no realistic way they'd ever be able to implement that, not without massive, massive public spending cuts.
Yeah, and as we know, that they've had a record amount of debt. They have very little fiscal headroom, so it's quite curious, I think, in some ways that people have been contemplating.
At the end of the day, you're trying to create a headline. You're trying to show that you're doing something to cut taxes, because all the publicity around the Conservative Party is you're supposed to be a Tory government and look how much tax has increased. I saw some chart the other day and it was saying apparently we're now into sort of mid-June before you finish paying your taxes to the government. You know, they sort of come up with the when do you start actually earning your own money? So, I don't really see, if you look over the last few years, this government, what have they actually achieved? Not very much.
And on the point about tax, Matthew, where, and the sort of areas of tax to cut, of course, the frozen thresholds mean that, in effect, there's been a steady rise over the last few years. Would you have changed anything to the thresholds of income tax?
I'm not a politician, but I would have thought it would be popular. But the same old problem, is it? How are you going to fund it? And again, you'll probably fall foul of the OBR and they'll probably slap your wrist and say you're not allowed to. And they seem to be very much in awe of everything the OBR says. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I think any conservative government that's serious about getting back into, back into government after the next election has really got to think more radically, because otherwise they're going to be in the wilderness for a very long time.
Speaking of the OBR, you might have seen this morning, they said that in January they estimated GDP increased, and that's the first time that has happened in some time. There was talk of the UK being in a technical recession at the end of last year. I just wondered, you know, going back to what we were talking about maybe seeing some more growth in the UK this year, when you as an advisor see a headline like that, Matthew, you know, how excited do you get about, you know, potentially better returns from the UK in 2024?
Well, I mean, logic says at some point we have to sort of get some level of growth. I mean, you hear, it depends who you speak to. I mean, there's so many statistics saying, yes, all the economic growth we've had in the last 5 years is really just based upon population increases, and per capita, it's barely moved the dial. You know, logic says that we should become more productive over time. I mean, I'm in my own little microcosm of our own business. I look at the things that we do and the new technology that we implement. You know, are we becoming more productive? Yeah, I think we are. So, and I'm sure that's replicated across most service industries across the UK. So, logic would dictate that we probably should be moving into a more growthy kind of environment over the next few years, regardless of which government's in charge.
I mean, do you have confidence in the Bank of England and what they do with interest rates to sort of stimulate that as much as possible?
Up to a point. I sound so negative, but when you look at the Bank of England as it is now, I think they're not very good. They tend to react to things rather than, they seem to always be following the narrative rather than dictating it. And the decisions they make, there always seems to be a bit of a time lag on it. I mean, again, I think they could have been more radical. I don't think they had to raise interest rates as high as they did, and I think they probably should be cutting them now, and they haven't really started. So, because it sends the right message, you know, and everything's politics. You know, you've got to try and make people see that you're trying to stimulate your own economy.
Do you think the Bank of England's targets for interest rates and targets for the levels of inflation will be met on time, or do you see that taking longer?
I can't profess to be any expert on it, but I mean, they're usually a little bit they're a little bit behind the curve on their projections. But I think on this particular point, I think they'll probably be right. I think the direction of travel is quite good. You can kind of see the wider indicators indicating that inflation is likely to come down. But there's always the unknowns, aren't there? There's always maybe some kind of a geopolitical event that can have an effect, you know, whether it be Gaza or whether it be Ukraine. You know, there's things you can't predict. So, with a fair wind, I think we should be fine.
Matthew, before you wrap up, do you have any closing thoughts on any of the budget announcements last week or anything that we've spoken about today?
My conclusion on the budget, it was disappointing. Predictable, but disappointing. And I think one thing that if I was advising the government, I would probably say, don't keep leaking everything before you actually announce it, because it takes the impact away. Why would you do it? You know, there were some good things in the budget, nothing very spectacular, but I didn't feel they really sold it very well.
Mm. Yeah, the national insurance cut was leaked about at least a few days before, wasn't it? And that was arguably one of the headline announcements.
I don't know why you would do that, but anyway, perhaps they're terrified again of a big kind of seismic shift in markets if they don't tell people.
If with given the current economic constraints, if you had one thing you could enact for the next government, what would it be?
For the next government, I would equalise inheritance tax so that everybody gets $1 million.
And why would you do that?
Because it's confusing and it's ambiguous and it's unfair, and I think it creates unintended consequences, which are probably mostly negative.
Mm. That's some good food for thought to end on.
I think we'll end on the negative consequences. Yeah. thank you so much for joining us, Matthew. You've been listening to The Advice Show with myself, Chief Reporter Nicola Blackburn, and Matthew Prescott-Frost from Matthew Douglas. For any questions, please feel free to tweet us at New Model Advisor or email us at nmateam@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
But today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.